I want to talk this morning on the subject of stewardship. Stewardship, as a term, basically is supposed to mean what we do with the things that God has entrusted to us. The use of the term is derived from some of the parables in the New Testament. There's the parable, for example, of the unjust steward in Luke chapter 16. And in some translations, the term steward is used in parables like the parable of the talents. And the idea is that in most of those parables is that God is represented as one who has entrusted certain things to his servants to use those things until some point in time at which they'll have to give account for those. And it's based on, of course, the practice that is still done some, I suppose, in our world, but was especially common in the world of the New Testament, that many times a fellow would own a farm or a tract of land or a business or something else, and maybe in fact own several of them, and maybe he even belonged to the class known as the idle rich, but still the idea was that he wouldn't be personally present at that business or at that farm or whatever. He'd only show up every once in a while and check on how things were going. The actual running of things was entrusted to a steward. And that's what a steward was, somebody that ran something for someone else, ran it like his own, though he didn't really own it. And really, in a lot of those situations, the steward could come to look at the farm as his own. I mean, he was the one that was there all the time. He made all of the decisions. He decided how to invest the money, what to do with this, that, and the other. It's just that he realized in the long run, however much he might have been able to profit by it and so on, it still really wasn't his farm, and ultimately, the profits went to the owner, and accountability ultimately went to the owner as well. And so it's on that practice that those many parables are based, and that we get the idea of stewardship, because in those parables, there is a parallel drawn between the things that God has entrusted to us. Well, as I say, that's the subject we want to talk on this morning, but I'd like to take a slightly different approach, not perhaps entirely different, because I think I've mentioned this before here. But I want to invite you to turn back in the Old Testament to the book of Numbers and the 15th chapter. The book of Numbers and the 15th chapter. And what I want to talk about, at least to start with, is a practice or a feature that was involved in the sacrificial system of the Old Testament. It's a feature that shows up in several occurrences of the word first. We know, for example, that God expected the children of Israel to offer the first fruits of their crops. In other words, when harvest time came, they were expected to take the first little part of the harvest that came in, and that was to be sacrificed to God. That was to be offered to God as an offering. We know, for example, that God claimed the firstborn of the herds. That firstborn of the sheep was to be sacrificed to God. Even the firstborn of families, the firstborn child, was reckoned as belonging to God. But instead of him being literally sacrificed, of course, they would offer a substitute sacrifice, and a goat or something of that nature would be sacrificed in his place. But still, God laid claim to it. That the firstborn belonged to him. And that same feature showed up in lots of, as I say, lots of different parts of their sacrificial system. Notice here, for example, in Numbers chapter 15, and starting, I guess we can start in verse 17, says, "Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Speak to the sons of Israel and say to them, When you enter the land where I bring you, then it shall be that when you eat of the food of the land, you shall lift up an offering to the Lord. Of the first of your dough," or meal, or depends on how that's translated, but anyway, something to do with their grain, "of the first of your dough, you shall lift up a cake as an offering. As the offering of the threshing floor, so you shall lift it up. From the first of your dough, you shall give to the Lord an offering throughout your generations." Now, of course, at the time God gave this commandment, they were still out in the wilderness. But he says, now look, you're coming into the land of Canaan. When you get there, and you start the process of planting crops and raising grain and so on, when you get that first grain harvest to come in, he says, you take the first bit of that grain, the first bit of dough that you make out of that, and you make me a cake. Offer that to me as an offering. Now, as I said, that same feature of providing for God, the first fruits, the firstborn, and so on, is a feature that shows up in lots of places, really, in the Old Testament, I think. When they offered a meal offering to Jehovah. They talked about that in the book of Leviticus. That's one of the types of sacrifice, a meal offering. And they bring apparently just a big bucket of grain or a sack of grain or whatever type of container they had to the temple. And they would offer it. But what they would do is they would not just dump out and burn the whole sack of grain there. They would scoop out a handful of the grain. And they would put that on the altar and they would burn that. And then the rest of the grain, they'd take and make some bread or cakes or whatever out of that, and they'd eat that. Likewise, most of the animals that they sacrificed. There was only one, the so-called whole burnt offering, that they burned up the whole animal on the altar. They would normally take a part of the animal. And the first thing they'd do is they would take that part of the animal and they would put that on the altar. And it would be sacrificed to Jehovah, and the rest of it, they would normally take and make a meal out of that. They would eat that themselves. Same thing for a drink offering. They would come and they would have some quantity of the wine that they had made that had been produced from the crop that year. And they would pour out a small portion of it. Again, sort of as a drink offering, also perhaps as first fruits. And the rest they would keep and use for themselves. And of course, the tithe, we might say 10% off the top, went to the Lord in terms of their system of giving. And maybe even the Sabbath day. I don't know whether you'd think of that as God saying, this is sort of my first fruits of the time or not. That expression is never used in the Old Testament, but you might think of it that way, I suppose. And I think of some other cases as well. I think especially of the case where Elijah, you might want to turn over there. Look at 1 Kings chapter 17. This is not part of the law of Moses, really. But turn over to, I said 1 Kings chapter 17. This thought just occurred to me and I hope I got the right place. Okay, 1 Kings chapter 17. You remember the story of Elijah, and there was famine in the land, and first he went to the brook, and the ravens came and fed him, but then the brook dried up, and so the Lord sent him to this woman that we call sometimes the Syrophoenician woman. In 1 Kings chapter 17 and verse 8, it says, "Go to Zarephath, which belongs to Sidon, and stay there. Behold, I have commanded a widow there to provide for you." So he arose and went to Zarephath. And when he came to the gate of the city, behold, a widow was there gathering sticks. And he called to her and he said, "Please get me a little water in a jar that I may drink." And as she was going to get it, he called to her and said, "Please bring me a piece of bread in your hand." She said, "As the Lord your God lives, I have no bread, only a handful of flour in the bowl and a little oil in the jar. Behold, I'm gathering a few sticks that I may go in and prepare for me and for my son, and that we may eat it and die." Then Elijah said to her, "Do not fear. Go, do as you have said, but make me a little bread cake from it first, and bring it out to me, and afterwards you may make one for yourself and for your son." Now, in some ways, this story illustrates the whole point I'm trying to make in the lesson this morning. Here's this woman. She's not acquainted with the law of Moses, so the law of offering a firstborn and all that, that's not the way the principles made or applied to her right here. She's just a pagan Canaanite woman. But apparently God saw something good in her, because when God needed a place to send Elijah for protection and for care and for feeding during this famine, he sent him to her. And so Elijah gets there, and this woman thinks her life is at an end. She's out there gathering sticks, and she's planning on cooking her last meal. And she got just a little bit of oil and a little bit of grain left, and she's going to cook her last meal, and then that's going to be it. And Elijah comes to her and says, "Give me a little drink of water," which, of course, this is in the midst of a famine. It hasn't rained for some time now. And that's kind of presumptuous to walk up and just say, "Give me some water," when you know everybody is conserving the last little drop they've got. And so she's going to go get it, though. Maybe demonstrating in that why God sent her. You know, be hospitable here, even if times are difficult. And then Elijah, it's almost like he's got the gall to call out after, oh, bake me some bread, too. You know, you kind of expect her to turn around and say, look, don't you know what's going on? There's a famine. Nobody's got any food left. You just think you can walk in and tell people to start feeding you like that? And she does respond kind of bitterly, but not that she's angry with him asking for something to eat. She just says, I ain't got anything. I'm getting ready to cook my last meal. But then Elijah, he tells her, he says, well, I'll tell you what. He says, you go ahead and cook. He says, but the first thing you do when you cook is you give me something to eat. Now, in a sense, I think Elijah's kind of standing in for the Lord right here. Maybe the Lord's using Elijah to stand in for him, we might say. And he says, you give me the first fruits, if we were to translate this into the terminology of the law of Moses. You give me the first little part of the sacrifice. The rest will take care of itself. And she does. And the rest does indeed take care of itself. And we're told that when she fed Elijah, that, of course, in verse 14, it says, thus says the Lord God, the bowl of flour shall not be exhausted, nor shall the jar of oil be empty until the day that the Lord sends rain on the face of the earth. So she went and did according to the word of Elijah, and she and he and her household ate for many days. The bowl of flour was not exhausted, nor did the jar of oil become empty, according to the word of the Lord, which he spoke through Elijah. Another case where God said to somebody, give me the first part of it. He said it through his law to the children of Israel, but to her he says it through Elijah. Give me the first part. Now, that feature, why does God do that? Why does God say, I want the first part? What's the effect of that? Well, Mike Bozeman in chapel just this past week, those of you at school, was talking about different types of governmental systems and that we generally prize democracy and despise monarchy. And yet the irony is that monarchy is exactly what God is presented to us, the type of rule of God over us is presented in Scripture. And you know, that's the way a monarch deals with his subjects. You know, he kind of goes around to them, and if they're out tending his fields or his farms, as far as he's concerned, he can come and take anything he wants. He looks out there, and this fellow's got a herd of sheep, and he picks out the finest one. He says, I'm going to take that, and that's mine. And somebody else is growing whatever he's growing. The king looks at it and says, all that really good stuff, the best stuff right up there, that's mine. I'll take that. So y'all can have the rest. And we say, why does the king do that? Well, because he owns it. It's all his in a monarchy. It all belongs to me. I can take whatever I want. And the subjects of the king, when they yield up whatever he takes, they're acknowledging that. Not just that little first part that he claimed belonged to him, but that the whole thing belonged to him. He can claim whatever he wants, good, bad, or indifferent. And they're acknowledging that when they let him take that first part. Now, it seems to me that really is the point of God's claim of the firstborn, or the first fruits, or the first of the widow's meal, or the first of anything else that God asks. And I would suggest that I really believe that there's a lesson in that for us in our giving to the Lord. Here, there's really only one point to this lesson. I'm still going to preach the usual amount of time, but there's still just one point to this lesson. We tend to think of things, I think, in this way. We tend to think if we've got a salary or income or whatever, any type of goods, we say, okay, I'm going to portion off 10% of this or whatever, and I'm going to give that to the Lord. And the rest is mine. That's the way we think normally, right? I'm going to give that to the Lord, and the rest is mine. Well, I don't believe that's really the way the system works. That certainly wasn't the way that it worked under the Old Testament. The point of God saying, I take the first fruits, is not I get the first one and the rest is yours. It wasn't I get the tithe and the rest is yours. It was, I own the whole flock. Give me the first one. I want to use it. The whole crop is mine. Everything you have is mine. And I want to use that part right there. And by giving, I've only got a few little passages that relate to this, but I really believe that the children of Israel understood that by giving a part to the Lord, they were dedicating the whole to the Lord. And that's really the point. Now, passage based on this very law that we read back here in Numbers chapter 15, turn to Romans chapter 11 and verse 16. Now, Paul's talking about something that's actually completely different right here, but he makes reference to that very law that we just read back there in Numbers. Romans chapter 11 and verse 16. He's actually talking about Jews and Gentiles right here and how the Gentiles can be made holy just as the Jews were. But in the process, he alludes to that law, and he says in verse 16, if the first piece of dough be holy, the lump is also. And then he goes on and he says, and if the root be holy, the branches are too. Now remember that business of the dough back there when God said, give me the first fruits. Now Paul is speaking to Jews who know the law here, and he says, now when you give that first lump or that first bit of the dough, the first cake or whatever, he says, when you dedicate that to the Lord, when you make that holy, he says, then that dedicates the whole thing. Because what you've really says is that it all belongs to the Lord, and he can claim whatever part he wants. Now, I believe that we ought to think about the things that we give in that same way. We ought to think about our stewardship of God's possessions in that same way. When we make a contribution on Sunday morning, do we say, okay, I have met my obligation to the Lord, the rest is mine? Or do we say, by giving that and anything else I give, I acknowledge really that all I have, all that I have belongs to God. And in that giving, I'm not just dedicating that to the Lord to make it holy. I'm dedicating everything that I have to the Lord. It's all holy. It all belongs to Him. It's all to be used in His service. I believe that's the way God was trying to teach the Israelites to understand what they had and understand the things that they gave. That by giving a part, they were not separating that and making that holy, and the rest then profaned to be used for whatever purposes they want, but rather they were consecrating everything by that very process. It was all made holy, and all then dedicated to be used in service to God. Now, I want to look at some of the parables. Some of these are parables of stewardship, might be called that, but some of the parables of Jesus in the New Testament. And I invite you to turn, if you will, Luke chapter 18, where Jesus talks about the two men who went to the temple to pray together. Luke chapter 18 and verse 10 says, then two men went up to the temple to pray, one Pharisee and the other a tax gatherer. And the Pharisee stood and was praying thus to himself, God, I thank thee that I'm not like other people, swindlers, unjust, adulterers, even like this tax gatherer. He says, I fast twice a week. I pay tithes of all I get. Now, notice that statement, he says. I pay tithes of all that I get. I suspect that that Pharisee had the sense that he had met his obligation to God by paying his tithes, and the rest was his. Now look at the next account, the account that John read for us a bit earlier. Verse 18, it says, a certain ruler questioned him, saying, good teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life? And Jesus said to him, why do you call me good? No one is good except God alone. He says, you know the commandments. Do not commit murder, or do not commit adultery. Do not murder. Do not steal. Do not bear false witness. Honor your father and mother. And he said, all these things have I kept from my youth up. Now, think about this. Jesus says, you know the commandments. And he starts to name some of them. He doesn't name all of them, but he starts to name some of them. And the fellow says to him, I've kept all of these. Now, Jesus didn't happen to mention here, pay your tithes or pay your first fruits. But do any of us doubt that this rich young ruler that came to Jesus was not scrupulous about paying his tithes and about all of the firstborn according to the law of Moses? And that's the whole point. The guy is saying, look, he says, I'm very careful to observe God's law. He says, I don't know anything that I've failed to do in keeping God's law. That would include paying the tithes and offering the firstborn and all of that. And Jesus doesn't criticize him for that. But notice that that's not what Jesus is concerned about. What Jesus is concerned about is about what about the rest of it? And so he says to him in the following verses. Says, when Jesus heard this, he said to him, one thing you still lack. Sell all that you possess, and you shall have treasure in heaven, and come follow me. But when he heard these things, he became very sad, for he was extremely rich. The fellow knew how to give a part to the Lord, but apparently he thought of the rest as belonging to him, not as being dedicated to the Lord. I really think when we stand before God on Judgment Day, he's probably not likely to ask us what percentage of our income we put in the collection plate. I think probably most of us would be tickled to death if that's all we had to worry about on Judgment Day. Just tell me how much, Lord, and we'll take care of it. I think we're going to find that the thing the Lord is the most concerned about is a percentage of the collection plate or other things that we might have done of a similar nature with our money, but rather what we've done with the rest of the things, with the rest of the money. Have we used that to his glory? Somebody said, but I got to feed my family. Well, of course you do. That ought to be done to the glory of the Lord. Paul says, if anybody doesn't take care of his own, he's denied the faith and he's worse than an infidel. He also says that we ought to labor, working with our hands, the thing that is good, in order that we might have to give to him that is in need. We need to think about whether or not focus so much. When we talk about stewardship, not focus so much on what percentage of money we give, but rather on whether or not our use of all of the things that God has entrusted to us is designed to reflect glory. I mentioned that in terms of money. Think of it in terms of time. Maybe we say, okay, I'm going to give the best of my time the first day of every week. I mean, that's really a marvelous thing that we're so easily able to do in our society. Now, we fortunately have gotten the weekend extended to cover the first day of the week. And so we get to take the first day. And while it is not ever specified in the Old Testament as a holy day, in the New Testament as a holy day, and the same laws are not given with regard to the first day of the week, they're given with regard to the Sabbath day for the Jews, nevertheless, we can in our minds say we're taking of our time, and we're setting apart this time for the Lord. Once again, I think when we face God in Judgment Day, God's probably not going to be as concerned with how many hours per week we set apart for him to come to church as what we did with the rest of our time, and whether or not that reflected a dedication to the Lord. In other words, there's no point trying to dedicate some little part to the Lord if that's not going to reflect the dedication of the whole to the Lord. As we look at each of these parables, I jotted down several here. In Luke chapter 12, we have the parable of the rich fool. It says somebody in the crowd, Luke chapter 12 and verse 13, someone in the crowd said to him, teacher, tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me. But he said to him, man, who appointed me a judge or arbiter over you? And then that fellow so concerned about getting his inheritance, and with that misplaced sense of values, Jesus proceeds to warn them against greed. And he does so by telling them this parable. It says, he told them a parable saying, the land of a certain rich man was very productive. And he began reasoning to himself, saying, what shall I do since I have no place to store my crops? And he said, this is what I will do. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones. And there I will store all my grain and my goods. I want to suggest that I suspect that Jesus presenting this parable in the Jewish context, that this rich fool, probably before he stored all his stuff up, he probably dutifully paid his tithes. He probably, you know, properly offered the firstborn. But he still had it rolling in. And so he said, what am I going to do with all of this stuff? He says, I paid my tithes and this is mine. Now, what am I going to do with it? He says, I'm going to build me some bigger barns. I'll tear down my barns and build larger ones, and there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years to come. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. God said to him, you fool, this very night your soul is required of you. And now who will own what you have prepared? So is the man who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. Now notice, what God's concerned about here is not the tithe, it's the other 90%. And what the fellow has done with that. He's claimed it for himself. If you want to think about laying up treasures for yourself in heaven, and I'm not trying to get our contribution to go down. That's not my point here. My point is for us to understand what we are and what we're not doing at that point. But if you want to lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, don't think about what portion you segment off to meet the needs of our work here in the church and say, that's where I'm laying up for myself a treasure in heaven. If you're laying up for yourself a treasure in heaven, it comes from everything that God has entrusted with you and how you use all of it, all of the time, all of the financial resources, all of the other blessings that God may confer upon you. It's with all of those things that we lay up treasures in heaven by using those things not for our own lust and desires, but for the glory of God, to reflect His honor, His glory, to let our light shine before men. A lot of other parables I could look at along the same line, but let me suggest that the converse of this point is also true. Back to the point I was trying to make earlier, that when we give some part, as we might do in contribution, or as the Jews did when they paid their tithes, or when they offered their firstborn, that really was not just to dedicate that little part to the Lord, but to signify that the whole thing is dedicated to the Lord. Okay, the converse of that, suppose we misuse a part of what God has entrusted to us. Now, this to me is a kind of a frightening thought in some ways. I think we shouldn't, as Christians, be just frightened, but I think we sometimes need to get a little scare poked in us so that we'll behave more responsibly on a regular basis. And in Galatians chapter 5, once again, the analogy of a lump. Earlier it was, if you dedicate a part of the lump to the Lord, then the whole lump is declared holy. Well, here it's talking about, what if a little part of the lump is corrupted? 1 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 6, he says, your boasting is not good. Do you not know that a little leaven leavens the whole lump? Now, again, he's talking about a different context right there, but the principle. And that is, suppose we dedicate some part of what God has entrusted to us to worldliness, to corruption. Aren't we saying, really, that the world has a claim on these things rather than God? So I ask us to look carefully at what we do with the things that God has entrusted us. What kind of stewards are we really? When the owner of the farm comes back to check with his steward, he doesn't just look at the balance sheet and see what percent of profit got turned into his hands that year. He looks at the whole farm. He wants to check out and know how everything has been used. and whether or not it's used in a way that he would approve of. And that's what I think God is looking at us to see. I think we need to realize that there are some symbolic gestures that we make, that when we give, sometimes a specific part, as we give in the contribution, for example, that there is a sense in which we are making a statement by faith. Not just that that belongs to God, but all that God needs of what we have. All that we have belongs to Him, and He claims whatever is needed for His work and for His service. And if it's needed in the congregation, if it's needed in the home, if it's needed wherever it's needed, it all ought to be dedicated to His service. And if we could do that, then I think we could learn not just to look at some parts of our money, or just look at all of our money as dedicated to the Lord, but look at all of our lives as dedicated to the Lord's service. It's not just that we're holy when we come here. It's not just that this is holy time. Our whole life is supposed to be holy, dedicated, consecrated to the Lord. Just a second, we'll stand and sing the invitation song that's been selected. Number 78, Hark the Gentle Voice of Jesus. Your life, if it has not been dedicated to the Lord, needs to be that. And when the Lord calls upon us to dedicate ourselves to Him, He doesn't ask for 10% of our money and one day out of the week of our time or something like that. He asks for everything. We sometimes sing the song, I Surrender All, which perhaps suggests the very idea that I'm trying to get across. Maybe that you this morning need to surrender all, that you need to dedicate the whole, not some part of your life, not what you're going to do with your Sundays from now on, but the whole of your life to His service. If you're subject to the invitation, need to obey the gospel, confess your faith, repent of your sins, and be baptized, we invite you to come as we stand and sing together.